Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to MILF Talk. Make your life fabulous with Sophie Venable, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to MILF Talk. Make your life fabulous.
MILF Talk! It's a new shout out. I was just trying that out.
That's for Dan, our one fan.
Yes, that's for you, Dan.
I'm Sophie Venable, and whether you are married with children, divorced, single, dating, poly, somehow all of the above, I am talking to you about life, love, relationships, dating, and quite often, sex.
I like that part.
Yeah, which is why Todd shows up. Yeah. And oh, wait, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Todd Robert Anderson.
Woo! Oh, thank you. That's a lovely round of applause.
I know, it always makes me happy. Kind of gets me giggling.
Yeah, yes. It's nice.
So we're back.
We're back.
Again. Sorry about the tease.
Yeah.
No,
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Right. Yeah, we missed 2 weeks. It was a natural disaster, I can blame. And then yes. I can blame a vacation. But literally, Todd's kid was home. My kid was home, which doesn't really matter because she's old enough. I can neglect her. But Todd was stuck at home waiting for power outages. And I literally, and then I got Lynn was going to come and join, which you'll meet Lynn next week. She's super cool. But I had my keys in my hand and my daughter's like, hey, mom, the 101's closed.
Yeah.
Calabasas is on fire. I was like, shit.
Yep.
Damn. Yep. Okay. So.
Well, and everybody on the, you know, on the news and the radio kept saying to me, like via the news and the radio, mm-hmm. if you don't have to go anywhere, you probably shouldn't.
That was the thing. I'm like, I felt a little bad about even, getting on the freeway to come and do a podcast because I know like the show must go on. I'm a theater girl. Like
sure,
I get
sure.
that. But I'm like, do I really want to add to the congestion and the inability of fire trucks to get to where they need to go? Because it was mayhem.
Yes.
So I stayed home.
That was a good call, I think.
I think I did the right thing.
Yeah.
And then promptly got on a plane to Mexico the next morning at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was all good. So I was celebrating my anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. 11 years with my love, Mark. Shout out to him, too.
Hi, Mark.
Our other fan.
Hi, other fan.
And, yeah, but... I'm sleeping with him, so he has to listen.
Wait, is that a rule? Because I have several podcasts, and my wife listens to none of them.
Oh.
Zero.
Well, you know, now you had an anniversary, too.
I did.
I know this because we like to celebrate together because yours is a day after ours.
Yeah.
You guys have the cooler date. You're 11-11.
11-11.
Yeah, we're 11-10.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, happy anniversary to you.
Thank you very much.
And how many years have...
19 years of marriage.
Ooh,
23 years together.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I was excited about the 20 and the round numbers and some excuse to go on like a big vacation.
Are you supposed to do anything?
I don't know.
I thought it was like 25.
I don't know, but we can come up with an excuse.
Quarter century and a half century and I don't know.
You know, life is short.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't wait.
Because shit's going down. So 19 years,
yeah.
Right? This is good. This is good.
Yeah.
And still fun.
Yeah.
I know. Isn't that cool?
It is cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
We had sex right on our anniversary. And then I looked at her and said, 19 years. And she said, 19. And we high-fived.
Woohoo!
And then we watched a horror movie together.
You guys.
That's how
crazy.
We keep it together.
I love it. That's how you keep it hot. So I have a question for you, and I apologize if I didn't warn you that I was going to ask you this kind of question. So, Todd, were you in love with yourself before you fell in love with Todd, but with Hillary?
Well, before I fell in love with myself, I was not.
The reason I ask this is because I was teaching a workshop last night, and we sort of went around and around. And I do get a little bit like woo-woo and ethereal when I talk about this stuff, but there is a very popular meme that's sort of like, you must love yourself before you can find love.
Mm.
And I get it, but I also think it's sort of it's one, it's a little bit misleading. And the semantics of it bother me. And I don't believe that that really tells you much about relationship and how relationship works. So with that said, let's go back to you.
Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I was an angry young man mm-hmm. when we met, mm-hmm. you know, frustrated artist, you know, tended towards dark moods. I don't know if that was a lack of self-love or too much self-love combined with entitlement. I don't know.
Bit of young narcissism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
do you feel, well, then would it be fair to say that maybe your love relationship helped you with those things?
Yeah, like definitely. That?
Yeah,
definitely. And I know you're not supposed to be that way. You're not supposed to find ways to love yourself through somebody else. But
I disagree.
I think in love, and I also think like having a kid too. I still was starting to love myself a little more.
It's
weird. You're right. It sounds like narcissistic to say, and I've never been a narcissist. I am an actor, so I guess there's like a sliver of it in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm.
Well, you know, selfish and self-aware and self-care and all that stuff, they have like different meanings. Like we really attribute like, you know, self-awareness and creativity, and sometimes we'll call that narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably another show. Such a big topic.
That is a big topic.
That's a big topic. You actually kind of said just a whole bunch of things there that I think help kind of illustrate my point, which is that I believe that all of our love relationships, whether they are our family relationships, friendships, love, romance, even friends with benefits, and all of our relationships contribute to our self-love process, you know? So this idea that you sort of go to a mountaintop and meditate for 2 years and fall in love with yourself, and then you come down the mountain, and because you're in love with yourself, you're going to find love.
Right.
And really, and what it's often indicated is that you're going to find the perfect romantic relationship.
Right.
And what the massive piece that's left out of that is, do you know how to take your self-awareness and your self-compassion and all of those things into relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of like saying, it's like saying we're not going to go there. Okay. So, what that doesn't teach you is what you are taking into relationship. So I have a lot of clients who feel great about themselves. They know that they're a great catch. They're mm-hmm. like, I'm self-sufficient and I'm attractive and I take good care of myself and I'm fun and I like to do this and I like sex and I like, you know, like they're great. They know they're great partners, but they get into relationship and suddenly they start to like put up with a bunch of crap. Doesn't feel good, or they're trying to make it work. They're dating by default, like we talked about last time. And that's not necessarily because they don't think highly of themselves, right? Like your lack of finding the right partner is not like some, fault in your self-esteem necessarily, but it might be in your self-esteem and your ability to take care of yourself in relationship. And I don't think that it's fair to sort of look at somebody and say, well, clearly you don't love yourself. It's like, well, I do. I think I do, but I haven't really been able to put it into practice. It's like I do over here in this vacuum, but once I get into relationship, I start changing the rules for myself and I start maybe lowering the bar, or I start, maybe I don't even have to lower the bar, but I do it anyway because I'm so afraid of loss.
Right.
So I really think like the reason is not about lack of self-love necessarily, but that it's fear, you know, that it's just fear-based. And of course that can come down to like, I fear that I'm not worthy enough and all of these things, but we don't really know, like we can't put that into practice and embody our self-love
right.
until we've experienced it. It's like if you, when you make a, I always say this about like making change. Like if you say, I'm going to eat healthy, I'm not going to eat sugar anymore, right? And then you walk into the office and somebody's just brought like massive plate of donuts and
that's
muffins.
That's always going to happen.
Always going to happen. Yeah. Now, what a lot of people say is that like, oh, that's just, you know, I'm being tested or punished or the universe is like, I look at that as a compassionate opportunity to embody your new choice. Mm-hmm. This is like your, you know, the past, the universe is just giving you this opportunity to now embody your new choice. Right.
Right.
Because you can say here in a vacuum, you know, that I am now a healthy eater. Okay. So your past is going to come up, right? And the plate of donuts is going to be there. And now you have this opportunity to make your new choice and to embody this new self, right? And I think it's the same way in relationship. So when, you know, I think that, you know, many people have trauma and that doesn't make them undateable.
Yeah, who hasn't had trauma? I mean,
yeah.
In fact, I don't think I'd date someone who didn't have trauma.
Exactly.
It's like, what? Like, how did you get through this without any
trauma?
That's weird, man. Like,
again, you were on a mountaintop.
Yeah.
Very likely. And so that's my feeling about I was teaching a workshop last night. A few of these things came up. And like I said, I get a little bit woo-woo about it because ultimately how I look at that is it doesn't matter what direction, so to speak, the love is going. In the sense that if you're on the vibration of love, you're on the vibration of love. So I would rather the meme were something far more complicated and not able to fit on a little square. That was like, if you want to experience loving behavior, then, you know, you need to either, you know, give loving behavior or allow loving behavior into your life. Because what you said about your child is such a perfect example, because you're experiencing the unconditionalness of love.
Mm-hmm.
Love as a vibration, love as a vibration, as a frequency,
right?
You're experiencing that with your son and you're loving that child, right? And in that process, what that's doing is that's bringing you into the vibration of love. And it's way easier to now give that to yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's literally, it's not because he's loving you or you're loving him or whatever. It's literally because you're now like stepping into the vibration of love.
Right.
So you might not like your cellulite. You might, I don't like that I'm sound sensitive. Like I don't like this about myself.
Sound sensitive?
I'm very sound sensitive. I have like this like... Like if there's two conversations going on at once, like my brain just stops working, or like if there's music on in the car, and I don't like about my pain in the ass. I hate it. It kills me. Like, don't even talk about it.
Yeah, talking about love, I'm sitting at the breakfast table
like,
with
God,
two
and
people
I
love.
And you.
Oh, why do you chew like that?
I'm sorry. It's so true. I hate it so much. So, okay. And I know this is a little bit like surface, but it's just an example. And sometimes what it does is it makes me not the most pleasant person, or I've even like snapped at Mark about it.
Sure.
Now, I don't love it about myself, but I know it about myself. And
right.
I am aware of it and can then move into love, which is any of the above: compassion, gratitude, appreciations, patience, allowance. Any of those places that you can move into about a subject matter are moving you into love, as opposed to resistance and anger and fear. So if I can own that, right? If I can just honor it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a corny word, but the word honor, for it just works. Like if I can just honor that in myself, right? Then I can deal with it. Then if I snap at Mark, I can be like, "I'm so sorry. Like there was just too many things happening at once, and he didn't like it." But
he understands.
But he understands it. But he can also say, like, "Do you think next time you might be able to try this? Like, I will do my best." You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, where then I don't have to go into the spiral of like, "I'm sorry, you just don't need it in." Like, you know, like I don't have to go into all that stuff because I can just move into, you know, allowance or patience with myself, which then creates patience from others. And so in that sense, I'm loving myself and receiving love from others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's just because in whatever way possible, somebody's moving into love.
Sure.
Like, so it's really about, this is not about like, oh, you have to love everything about yourself and you have to, you know, and because what I see happen too, is that people are like, I am just totally okay with myself. And like, you just have to be okay with everything about me.
Right.
And so what that is like, okay, that's a guarded love and acceptance, you know, like a guarded acceptance of who you are, but it's not really accepting another person's reaction to you or their, you know, their issues or, you know, so really it's just about allowance, right? Just not being in resistance to who you are. So I guess that's what I would say is that it's really more about knowing yourself and not being in resistance to who you are.
That makes sense.
Then it is about loving yourself.
Well, I think I still am. I'm critical of myself and I watch myself and I think maybe
doesn't make you unlovable.
No, well, and I don't think that's self-loathing necessarily. I mean, maybe it looked that way when I was young and angry and full of myself and all that, but I think being critical of myself and minding myself and the way I operate with other people in the world is a way of loving myself, because I feel like if I adjust something, like, you know, like woke culture, whatever. So I like would say something dumb in my past, not realizing it, but being open to hearing criticism from others because I am critical of myself, but in a constructive way. I'm not, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio in that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood movie, beating myself up because I screwed my lines up or something.
Right.
It's constructive, and I allow myself to change, and I allow myself to become more aware. And to me, that's, you know, a way of loving myself.
It is, because it's allowance.
Yeah.
It's allowing for you to be, because you can't change what you don't acknowledge and you really can't change what you don't allow for, because because otherwise you're just in resistance to it and you're just staying on that frequency.
Right.
I know. And I'm getting all woo-woo. Okay. Still saying frequency and vibration. Oh my God, we're going to start.
Well, I mean, it's funny.
But it's true.
What other language do you use when you're talking about love? Because love is like, it's a word that everybody at least thinks they understand and they know what it is, but there's no scientific, I mean, I guess there's some chemicals and all that stuff and there's some science, but like love in general is not something that you can nail down and define very easily.
No, and we do know that emotions emit a frequency, and that we create a frequency. We have that creates chemical in our body, and so it's like, is I don't even know if that chemical comes after the frequency, like the emotion,
right.
You know. And so, or maybe I don't know.
Maybe the chemical.
I'd gotta look that up. But
I don't know.
But it's so. So when we talk about when I talk about love and what it means to even be in love is. I talk about frequencies that are harmonious with love. Like I sort of break it down like a lot of people do. I'm not inventing the wheel here, but to fear and love. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if love is unconditional, I always say love is unconditional. It's a frequency. It's a force. Relationships are conditional as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about like, oh my God, I have to love you under any circumstances. That's fine. I can love you from over here, but relating with you and having you impact my life is conditional.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
So
that's the reality.
So that's the reality. So, or our earthly reality. And so what I like to say, because it's not always easy to, let's say a child misbehaving or a loved one that's really hurt your feelings. It's not really easy to move into what we would think of as like, well, I just love you anyway, or I, you know, so what I talk about are frequencies that are harmonious, which are compassion, gratitude, appreciation, allowance, patience, and even curiosity. Curiosity can be an entry point for forgiveness. You know, it can be an entry point for love, because for just moving into that frequency of love where you're not in resistance. It's like, okay, I'm just going to get curious about this. Like, try it sometime. It's amazing. It's like magic. And so that's where like you even went into, say, allowance and curiosity around your, you know, previous unwoke statements or whatever.
Sure, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that is loving. That is loving.
Yeah.
You're not saying like, I love myself and all my shitty statements. You're just saying like, oh, that's interesting, because that's how we change.
Yep.
Because you can't change it until you acknowledge it. You can't change it until you sit with it and look and go, oh, okay. that's how we change.
Maybe that's sort of, you hit on what the difference between self-love and narcissism is.
Yeah.
Because narcissism clinging onto your bad ideas because you love yourself so much that everybody else is wrong to criticize you.
Right. And I would even say, maybe not that you love yourself so much, but that you are so attached to the identity, that your ego is so attached to the identity around that and being right, that if you are wrong, your ego will die. That's really what narcissism is about.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of those out there.
There's a lot. Well,
are there grades of it?
Well, yes.
Is there narcissism 1 and 2 and 3? Murder.
There's not really like I don't know that there's technical grade, like in the DSM-4, I don't think there's like grades of it. But I mean, I guess you've got, you know, different personality disorders and such. But I really think that narcissism it becomes more prevalent in a community or in a, you know, like I think of us as kind of tribal, but like I think it becomes more prevalent as we become more afraid. Because the more that you are in survival mode, the more that you believe that everything, the only thing that's real is that which is, you know, tangible, and you become more attached to the rightness of that in your mind. I hope I'm making sense.
Like that
it's the more sense, the more your fear mind is activated, the more likely you are to behave narcissistically. Mm-hmm. I think, like, if I were to grade people, I do have a term I use called the well-meaning narcissist.
Okay, and, what's that?
Well, these are people that you know that if they hadn't been fucked with as a kid, like, you know, like they would be like amazingly generous, like emotionally generous and stuff. Like you could just kind of like see their wounds, and like they really, really try to be good people.
But they don't get it right.
Yeah, they just. But it's like they really try to be good people, and they're even sincere about it. But they just don't know how to fix the fact that if you step on their wound, it's going to be like, like you. How could you do this? How could you say this? And it's just like, oh, it's so fucking heartbreaking because you can see the desire in them to like want to connect and all of those things. Like they're not as protected and jaded and, you know, all about me, you know.
Right.
So that, I mean,
but
I sort
get
of
get triggered into narcissism.
Yes, yes. And also I think it's safe to say, and if you're an addiction specialist out there, you could argue with me. I'm happy to hear from you. Come on the show. I think generally when people are in their addiction, they're narcissistic. Mm-hmm. And so what's difficult is that many addicts, I would say, are when they're out of their addiction, like when they're sober, when they're clean, are not narcissistic. They're actually kind of neurotic. You know, they're like, I would say, easiest definition is a narcissist says everybody else is the problem. A neurotic says I'm the problem all the time.
They shift back the other way.
Yeah. And so which is generally, but there's so much pain in that, which is what causes them to want to numb out with the addiction. But then when they're in the addiction, the survival becomes around getting the thing that they're addicted to. Uh-huh. And so they can't be empathetic. Like they're not like they can't. And so they can't put themselves in your shoes. They can't reconcile that they're the problem. They can't see any of that. They're just in survival mode. And so they sort of kind of point outward to the world.
Is that why you get in fights when you're drunk with your friends?
Yes.
And then you wake up the next day and go, why the fuck did we get in a fight? And you call and you're like, I'm so sorry.
I don't know. I don't know if that's exactly why, but that's a good question. I'm going to think about it for next week. But there are also those addicts who are, whether they're in... They are really narcissistic people, and they're even just worse in their addiction, and they come out of their addiction and they're still narcissistic, and they're very painful to be in relationship with. And it's really difficult because you want to support somebody in their sobriety and such, but you still might not be able to be in relationship with them. And that's always really heartbreaking because we do fall in love with the person. We fall in love with the person that's in the good part of the cycle, you know?
Right.
And it feels so good, you know? Mm-hmm. But then what we get from that is intermittent reinforcement. Like abuse is really about abuse, or just it doesn't even have to really be, you know, abuse, but I guess really emotionally it generally is based on intermittent reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is when you don't know when the reward is going to come, like a slot machine,
mm-hmm.
right? Very, very powerful. It's like the most powerful kind of conditioning.
Like a slot machine or an acting career?
Yes.
You don't know when the prize is going to come.
Exactly. Exactly right. And you get a little payoff, then you get a little payoff, then you get a big payoff, then you get a little payoff.
Yeah.
And you never know what it's going to be or when it's going to come. And so when you don't know, it's very, that's really addicting. It's like the most addicting pattern in behavioral psychology and what they would say behavioral psychology. So, so don't be a lab rat.
All right.
Yeah. So where have we gone? We've gone from anniversaries and loving yourself to
narcissism.
And
I haven't mentioned politics once.
I know, you're so good.
Although I wonder about your breakdown of narcissism.
Yeah.
And if that's not a huge part of it.
Well, and also like the fear. You know, like the fear-based, you know, we have it like the economy is a little scary, you know, and all that stuff.
And well, so and everybody has to be right. I mean,
everybody
and
has
I think
to be right.
That's a bipartisan issue at this point.
It is.
Everybody has to be
yes,
right.
Yes, because there's no talking, right?
Yeah.
There's no actual like politicking, like that, like the definition of it,
right?
It's not like we see the same problem different ways. Let's talk about it. It's just like, we're right, really.
Yeah.
So it's,
and there, and
which
I have,
makes it really boring.
And it does. And I have friends, it's funny, who will have totally reasonable conversations. But if I say one wrong critical thing that goes against whatever their thing is, then I get a talking to.
And I do think that to some degree, because we are all in a little bit of survival mode, ideologically, financially,
oh, God.
Like, you know, like all of those things that it does sort of slide us into more narcissistic behavior, you know, like even if you think that yours is the more humane and obviously better choice, we're just still so polarized.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so it becomes like if you, and again, I guess what I would say the solution is in your own mind or even in conversation, if it's possible, is to move into patience or curiosity or allowance. You might not get to gratitude or compassion. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can even just move into allowance or curiosity, then you're going to not throw a grenade into your relationship, into your friendship.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And two, you're not going to have all those shitty chemicals running through your body. So it's better for you.
Yeah.
And you're not really emitting that frequency, because every time you get into that and you just hold tight and get angry about that stuff, all you're doing is just like a fucking beacon for more of it.
Yeah. And it doesn't do any good.
It's literally like hating haters. It's like, what are you doing? You're hating. So you hate haters. You know, you're a hater. I mean, it's just that simple.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's
hating is a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious. I hate hating.
I hate hating.
I'm so patient with myself and my hating. Sometimes I hate things. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So.
Like Brussels sprouts.
Really?
I don't like them.
It's okay.
People love them.
I allow it. I will allow it. People. I know.
Well, I've tried. The
even
Brussels.
With like the balsamic and
look,
the...
if you put bacon in there, I'm gonna have them because there's bacon in it. But
fair
that's
enough.
About it.
Fair enough.
And does that kind of cancel out the health value of a Brussels sprout?
Would that make you like it more?
I mean, bacon, like bacon on it.
Is that a good thing? Do you want me to say yes? Like,
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I'm asking.
I don't know. I mean, like one slice of bacon, like sliced up into little tiny, tiny bits. I mean, how much? I mean, I know they're charging for it, but I doubt there's very much bacon in the whole
thing.
It's
a flavoring.
Yeah, it's
really.
A flavoring, yeah.
Okay.
So I think you could do it.
So it's still, the Brussels sprouts still out with their
but
health.
But don't, if I share my Brussels sprouts with you, don't you eat all the fucking bacon out of it and just hand me back the Brussels sprouts.
That's totally what I'll do.
That's it.
These Brussels sprouts
were
great.
I'm going to eat prison style. I'm going to be like, get away with my Brussels sprouts. Eat some french fries. So I brought this thing because we had brought up a subject last week. Liars. And you had brought up your friend that was like kind of a player, but was like, oh, I'm polyamorous, right? Okay,
yeah.
We were like, probably a little narcissistic there.
For sure.
So,
for sure.
Yeah, so I brought this. I had mentioned this article. It's very old. It's like from 2015. It's written by a woman that calls herself Gracie X, and she does a lot of sex writing. She's super cool. And I just really liked this little article because it gave six different types of ethical non-monogamy. And, you know, in the dating world, like I've been working with women around dating and relationships for a really long time, but I would say in like the last maybe 4 to 5 years, I've had almost on a regular basis them say like, so I went out with this guy and then he told me he was non-monogamous. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck you.
Right.
And I'm like, did you throw your drink in his face? I hope not. So I've actually kind of included a little bit of a digest of a talk about it in one of my courses because again, like the resistance and the anger, it doesn't really do anybody any good. And I'm not saying you got to go out on another date or be non-monogamous, but it's just, you know, my goal is just to help us understand each other. That's just basically my overall goal in life. And so I thought I would go over this. So there's just, because these are kind of her definitions. And of course, this is, you know, somebody else might be like, she's wrong. This is not the definition. But I think this is pretty good. So,
and it's kind of topical right now.
It's so topical right now. That's what I mean. It's just kind of everywhere.
We mentioned Tom Hiddleston, I think, in the last episode.
Yes.
Coming out as polyamorous.
Yes.
And saying it saved his marriage. And then more recently, my district in California, represented by Katie Hill, mm-hmm. she ran into a bit of a polyamorous problem as well.
Oh, see, I'm not paying attention.
Oh, yeah, she resigned.
Oh.
She's the victim of revenge porn. Mm. And I absolutely think that her ex-husband.
Why do people film threesomes?
I don't know. Especially politicians. You got to be out of your mind.
God, what are you doing?
You're not thinking.
Not thinking. Clearly.
Being dumb.
All the blood is rushing to other areas.
I mean, I know she was doing bong hits and all that stuff, but come on. I mean, how high do you have to get to get that stupid?
Wow, that's a hell of a tape.
But it's what happened was her husband at the time, they had a throuple, they called it.
A throuple. Okay.
And he took photos of one of their throuple experiences.
Yeah.
And then their marriage fell apart. Mm. And he revenge porned her. And other people on the other side of the political arena made sure that stuff leaked. Now, is she a victim of revenge porn? Absolutely. I think her husband should be prosecuted and thrown in jail, and anybody else who did it should as well, because I think that's wrong. I think it is illegal at this point.
I think it is.
Revenge porn is actually illegal. But at the same time, you know, she's a politician and she took these photos and it was with somebody who was on either her campaign staff or her current staff or something like that. So
it
became such a hot mess. But that was one of the things I thought of, was that obviously the timeline of this, obviously the marriage that she was in must have been shaky.
Well,
because this all happened in the last
marriages
year
are
and
shaky
half.
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah, sure.
Like not just because of non-monogamy.
No, but what I'm saying is, if your marriage is shaky, maybe a throuple is not the way to build it back up. Maybe that's a dicey choice.
Well, it's very interesting that you said. Well, here, let me just read. I'm going to read like the first few of these.
Okay. Cool.
And it's not like, don't worry, I'm not like, it's not going to be a long poetry reading or anything. Okay. So the first one is polyamory. And she said this word literally means loving many. Polyamorous people are usually interested in living together and growing deeper bonds. A household can be any configuration: two women, one man, a quad, foursome, groups larger in size with various agreements. So that's really about relationship, right? Not just about sex. Like it's not just about, because and then it goes on further, but and one of the other definitions. The second one is swinging. The general idea is that you engage in sex play but aren't looking to develop long-term relationship. Some swingers are in committed relationship and go to swing parties together to find singles or couples to play with. So that's really more about bringing play with others into your relationship, right? So, and not looking to develop a long-term romantic relationship with a third or fourth or whatever. Polyfidelity is used to describe a closed set of relationships. Whether in a triad, a quad, or more, you are sexually exclusive with people in the relationship system. So that to me seems like a type of polyamory.
Right, sure. Okay. That's what I kind of thought polyamory was, but I guess polyamory can be swingy in
I guess in polyamory, somebody might also be a swinger. But people who are poly are like, we're not swingers. Like, you know, they definitely don't want to be identified that way. And swingers will sometimes say, like, I don't want to be poly. Like, I don't, sure, I'm not poly. Yeah. You know, and so, and then there's the primary and secondary relationships. Some people configure their relationships with a central relationship and one that is more on the side or secondary.
So it's like satellite relationship?
Or like you have your primary marriage, let's say, and you have a relationship or a girlfriend out of town or, you know, the, uh-huh, on the side, but it's very clear that your marriage is your primary and takes precedence over the others. But some people, as she notes here, some people find these distinctions insulting, making the second person feel secondary. But that's not always true. I think that some people are happy to be secondary because might also have a primary.
Yeah, or maybe they just don't want to be the primary. They like the romantic relationship, but they don't have to do all the heavy lifting.
They don't exactly don't have to raise the kids and shit.
It's like being a supporting guy on a sitcom. You just come in, you get the laughs, and you leave, and you're not in the whole show.
Yeah. So I know I said I was going to read three, but I'm reading them all. So five, sexually monogamous polyamory. This is very interesting. This one fascinated me. Hang in there. Did I confuse you? There are folks who have a beloved that they're married to or live with and also have someone else that they are in love with or have a deep attraction to but do not have sex with. Everyone involved is fully on board with the arrangement. Okay, so some they're sexually monogamous but emotionally polyamorous.
Interesting.
And I actually think I know a triad like this. Now, it's not my damn business, okay? Mm-hmm. But there was a point a while back where I can't remember the context, but it was sort of indicated that this third person in their relationship was not having sex with the husband. But they all wear rings and they're very happy and they love each other and they take care of each other. And
Very interesting.
I know, very interesting. Now, they might be. I don't know. I don't care. It's not my business. Because I will say that just because you ask somebody something doesn't mean you're entitled to the truth.
Right. Well, sure.
Now, if you are my partner and I'm asking you if you slept with somebody, yeah, I'm entitled to that question. But just because your friend's like, hey, did you bang that guy? You don't have to tell them.
No, you really don't.
It's really not their business.
You don't.
Like, because that's your privacy and that other person's privacy, too. So, like, I'm just giving you full permission to just lie about that. Because I have
so many questions about the third person who's having an emotionally romantic relationship with a
couple?
Another two people but or not having sex. And does that person go have casual sex, or is this person asexual and just likes the romance?
I guess
the
if they
sex?
Were polyfidelitous, then they would not. But then there wouldn't be Well, okay.
So many
here's
questions.
Here's the thing. There are many reasons that people don't have sex. Okay.
Sure,
they might not like it. It might be painful for them. It might be too much for them. They might just not really be able to handle it. They just might not like it. Like it's
sure.
You know, it's there are a lot of reasons that somebody could not want to have sex.
Like,
but I would imagine that if I was part of a couple who just trying to think, and that person didn't want to have sex with us, but we love them, I guess. And I'm just really trying to put myself in this position here. Okay. If I love that person and she wants to have sex with somebody, why would I want to keep her from doing that?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? So like, if I really love you and to me, I would think that also could be some sort of arrangement.
Sure.
But this one really was like, ooh, interesting. Sexually monogamous polyamory. Very interesting. But I think it's kind of sweet in a way, right? Because you're just loving that person.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's
like
cool.
Y'all
I mean, no
take
judgment.
Care of each other.
I just have questions. About,
yeah, I know. Like, just
but it's
so
probably,
curious. But it's really not your damn business.
It's none
Todd.
Of my damn business. Sorry, I asked.
So if you ask. They have my permission to lie.
Or say.
Like they care about me.
Not talking to you.
Oh, I'm not talking to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then the sixth one was open marriage. And it's sort of an umbrella term that that can encompass a lot of arrangements. And typically it means that there's some flexibility in the marriage to explore sexual encounters or relationships with others.
Very popular in show business.
Very popular in show business. And also a very popular term tends to be like, I think polyamory and open marriage are like euphemisms sometimes for swinging or
Yeah, these things all get mixed up.
They all get mixed up. And that's why she was kind enough to write this article, because then she also says, and the seventh is everything in between.
Okay.
So what I would say to somebody who is like on a date and the person says like, I'm not monogamous. I can't be monogamous. The first question really has to be, tell me more, like what you mean by that. Like, because that could mean everything from like, he would love it if after a while, when you guys are really comfortable, you could go to a sex club once in a while, you know?
Right.
Or it might mean he's got a girlfriend, a married girlfriend that he's not willing to give up, but he wants a primary relationship with you. That might not be okay with you, or it might be fine. I don't know.
Right.
Or it might just mean that he it really wants to date somebody bisexual so that the two of you can have sex with another woman from time to time. It can look like so many things. What you need to suss out is what is the emotional... what does this mean for you emotionally?
Right.
You know, like what are you dealing with? If they're like, well, I already have like, you know, three or four friends with benefits and I really don't want to give them up, but I do want to see if this relationship develops into something. Then what I would say is like, I don't really think if you're okay with that, like and use condoms, please. If you're okay with that and you don't mind spending a few months getting to know this person and having sex with them, knowing that they're going to see their friends here and there, and maybe even if you want to meet the friends. I'm thinking of a particular client that went through this. Then I think it's fair after a few months, just with any relationship, to say, I need a period of monogamy.
Right.
Because I need to know, like, I need this to develop in a safe manner. Like, you know, like if you get to a couple of months, you're like, we seem to be like, we could be good partners, you know? I think it's fair to ask for a period of monogamy, because I think that any kind of non-monogamy has to come from an overflow in the relationship. It can't come from like some sort of broken need.
And right.
Which is interesting, because your Higglebottom person said that it saved his marriage. And that, you know, like I've read a lot of those kind of articles, you know, where it's like, this saved my marriage. And I get that, but I don't. But man, I would never be like, hey, try swinging. That might save your marriage.
It just like, seems like a bad
it seems like
recipe.
But as long as like when your marriage falls apart anyway, you don't blame the swinging.
Well, no, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just it's interesting, because non-monogamy is just like it's right there. Like you said, it's very topical. It's everywhere. And I think that people really don't know what to make of it. You know, how can you really love each other and have sex with other people is the question.
In your example, like a gray area I would have perhaps is if, you know, I was on a date early in a relationship and that person said, I can't be monogamous. I have, you know, several friends with benefits that I'm not willing to give up. Like where's the cutoff point between an inability to commit to something,
I know, right?
and being sexually free being or whatever it is, you know, that seems
that's a lot to negotiate.
Yeah,
I think it would be really, really challenging. And I think the right thing to do if you are non-monogamous is to tell somebody sort of off the bat, or get on a site like openminded.com. I think there's one like that, or
I'm sure there's lots of them.
Well, there's lots of them. There's something. There's even I think it's Arrangements or something, where you look like if you're looking for a sugar daddy or something to somebody. Yeah. Hey, looking for a sugar mama?
Yeah. If I'm going to be non-monogamous, I want to make some cash.
Exactly.
I'm going to be one of those.
What's in it for me?
I learned about the financial domination thing doing a TV show. When I got the script, I was like, they made this up,
and then you found out it was real.
Totally,
I know.
Real.
We should probably do like a whole episode on that, because that shit sounds crazy to me.
I think it's more, you know.
Oh, was that judgy? That was judgy. More, sorry.
Don't be judgy.
Crazy. There is something for everyone out there.
Yeah, if a super rich dude wants to get financially abused by a woman, I'm not going to get in the way of that. I just wish, you know, the reverse gender thing was
so
more.
So many thoughts. I just.
It's really it's strange. No judgment, but it looks strange from the outside.
Exactly.
This is your thing. A woman calls you and says, "Drop $30,000 in the mailbox outside my apartment, you fucking loser." And you go, great. I don't know. But, you know.
Okay, so it's an energy exchange. I mean, yeah. It's like a...
This is why we need to...
I'm really... We
need, this is why we need the pay gap to be removed so I can be a financial dominator. What's the dom?
A findom.
I know it's a findom, but what's it's a financial dominatrix is generally.
Cool.
But what's a guy
called? I didn't make that up, I guess.
Like a lady is a dominant. Is it just a dominant?
Well, it's whoever's dom. I don't think it matters if you're male or female.
But a dominatrix is a lady dominant.
Right.
That's why I was asking. Is a man called a dominant?
Maybe so, because like back in the day when we said steward and stewardess, right? This were actor and actress.
Right.
This would be dom and dominatrix.
Dominant.
I should say actrix.
Actrix.
Steward.
Actor and actrix.
I like it.
But I want the pay gap.
You want the pay gap.
Remove it.
Everybody, Todd needs his pay gap removed.
I can be a financial dom.
All right.
And make some
you know,
cash.
You're just putting it out there. Energetically, you're just putting it out there in the world. You're manifesting.
I probably feel awful
you
calling
would.
Anyone a fucking loser.
I know. You don't have it in you.
Can you just bring me the money?
Just
I don't want to be mean.
I'll act for you.
Yeah, just come over. I'll do a monologue.
That'd be great if you just had like standing on your lawn just doing monologues. People just.
Well, who knows if the power goes out worldwide, we could go back to that.
We could go back to
I'll be a backyard actor.
I love it.
You know, go
cool
old school.
Would that be? We could have like little Shakespearean stages in our backyard and stuff.
I'm a little afraid of it though, because you know, like that movie Tombstone, and there was a show called that was set during the Depression. I can't remember, but it was about it was called Carnival, I think, and it was about a traveling carnival, like of entertainers that go from place to place in the Dust Bowl. But it could be real dicey, towns you visited in. So
yeah.
I don't know. If everything is like kind of cool, like it is in the suburbs, then I could do the backyard monologues. But I might be afraid to go into the wrong places.
You just need to learn magic, Todd. There's all kinds of money in being a magician.
Yeah, that's true. I don't have the self-discipline or to do that. Like my kid learned some tricks. And he was pretty good.
Cool.
The sleight of hand stuff. I was really impressed.
You could sleight of hand money out of people.
That's what you do.
Okay, I'm glad we've solved this
problem. I'll do the monologue while my son picks pockets. I have seen that play out. It works.
And if you are needing a fine ginger actor, you just call Todd Robert Anderson. You can find him at...
ToddRobertAnderson.com. Easy peasy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this was good times. I don't know if we solved anything with this, but we educated.
Well, that's
we
an education.
I mean, I think so.
But I think the last one is actually really indicative of what this is. There's a lot of varieties
out there. And I guess what I would just say is, like, it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody is incapable of commitment. They might be fully committed to their relationship and you know, just, you know, want to have more experience, you know, together and expand their world together and all that stuff. But and we are capable of loving more than one person.
Sure.
And, you know, partnership and relationship those things are divined in many ways. And so if, you know, somebody has a triad and they feel, you know, partnered, so to speak, and seen and loved and cared for, then, you know, what's wrong with more love?
Yeah.
You know,
I
can't really judge your
sounds
more loving
great.
Situation. Sounds great. You got three people to do the dishes.
Yeah.
Great.
I bet if I had a polyamorous thing, I'd still be the
You'd
one always
the,
doing the
for
fucking
sure,
dishes.
For sure. Well, you know, you're good at it. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well,
so
as long as whoever this other person is bringing in some serious income, I'm down with it.
You're down. All right. So if you would like some free resources about relationships and dating, you can opt in at sophievenable.com. You can also pre-order Intentional Dating on amazon.com. And if you want any information on courses or coaching, you go to the same place, sophievenable.com. So thank you so much for listening to Film Talk.
We're talking about movies? Movies.
It's because you are here. Thank you so much for listening to MILF Talk. And I'm just here to remind you that you don't need to make your life perfect. Just make it fabulous.